Healing is situated in love. As we are mourning, we are remembering the commitment engendered by our Bodhisattva vow, not just to achieve enlightenment and free all beings, but to hold space for the pain of beings in our practice as we hold our own. When we are able to show up to our own suffering, we are also able to show up to the suffering of others. This is how we begin the courageous and great work of loving ourselves and extending that same love to as many people as we can. So I like that title of this chant, Healing is Situated in Love. More of a reading, I guess. And it has me thinking, what does that mean? For healing to be situated in love. What does it mean to practice Zen? What does it mean to meditate? In the Dharma, we read and hear about the exact equality of emptiness and form. But somehow, through our practice, we are transformed. Our relationship with what we might describe as form shifts in some way. We might say we come to see the emptiness of forms. And this is quite a koan. What does that mean? And the mind can come up with many definitions, trying to create an equality between two things that seem different within the mind. There's emptiness and there's form, and somehow they are one. And the moment we get into that exercise intellectually, we're actually quite lost. And yet, this teaching has power for the way. It's pointing to something. Perhaps pointing to something beyond comprehension, beyond what the analytical mind can make sense of. In Dharma talks, in readings, we find ways to connect the dots between the teachings of form, impermanence, lack of intrinsic identity, and emptiness. And this is useful . But in some way, we also know that that comprehension, that understanding is not awakening itself. It's another mental map or model of reality. It's a pointer, but it's somewhat unsatisfying. It can actually become a bit of a burden. You know, we put it in our knapsack and carry it around for a while. And then it gets a bit heavy. This practice invites us to something more intimate. And it invites us to intimacy with life. And the words form and emptiness are signposts, invitations, like little welcome mats at the door, saying, come. Come on in. Take a look at your life. Do you see how it's form? Do you see how it's emptiness? And you keep looking and looking and looking. And that's the real power of these terms. Because ultimately, life isn't form and emptiness. Those are just words. Zen is a collection of wonderful teachings that transcend themselves. Everyone knows the story of the two monks and one helps a woman cross the river, and at the other side, the other one says, hey, you weren't supposed to touch her. And the other responds, well, look who's still holding on to her. We all know the teaching also that the teachings are a raft that are to help us cross the river of samsara. And when we get across, we don't carry the raft with us. We put it down. Zen points beyond Zen. And then, of course, we can say, well, that's Zen too. Emptiness points beyond any idea of emptiness that we may have of it. Sometimes it's powerful to try a different word, like love. In the end of the novel Siddhartha, the main character, Siddhartha, who is not Buddha, who has in fact rejected Buddha's teachings earlier, culminates by saying that, you know, it's all about love. And his friend, who's been following Buddha his whole life, says, well, Buddha doesn't use that word. Buddha doesn't believe in love. Buddha uses compassion. And Siddhartha says, They're just words. I know we mean the same thing. How could he have taught for his whole life, given his life to helping people if he didn't love? So what if we loosen up a little bit around the puzzles and let it be poetry? Let it be evocative. Let it be an invitation, a welcome mat, inviting you to step forth into something that is quite beyond the capacity of language to capture. Which isn't to say that language isn't beautiful. Language is part of it. Healing is situated in love. Healing is situated in presence. Sometimes we are cut off from our love. Sometimes there are wounds, and they might be ancient wounds. Wounds from a time that we don't even remember. Early childhood. Deep pains that we can't even comprehend. All we know is that we hurt, that our openness becomes clouded over, that we become bitter or depressed or angry. And Zen is the practice of turning toward whatever is present. Giving it our love. Giving it space. Attention. Allowing it to unfold. Sometimes we can get lost in the teachings. And forget that this is really just about intimacy with our life. Our heart. Sometimes Zen isn't enough. It's important to say that. Sometimes we need more help. Some kind of therapeutic encounter or endeavor to help us see what hurts. But we can bring this practice into that work. They're not mutually exclusive. Learn to give our attention to the hurt places in our own hearts. We read that just seeing is enough. And there's some truth to this. But sometimes that can mean that perhaps we limit the way that we're ready to heal to just seeing. And sometimes that isn't enough. Sometimes we need help. We need an intervention. Zen offers some. It offers the precepts, which are so important in our practice. Because we can perpetuate harm to ourselves and in the world by breaking precepts. Most fundamentally, the precepts say, please stop hurting people. When we do, we hurt ourselves. We justify the reasons that we hurt people. We get caught in these loops. And the precepts can help break those patterns. We might call them a skillful means, helping awaken us to the most optimistic of teachings in Buddhism, that ultimately our true nature is open, loving, and appreciative. That ultimately, when we are aligned with our true nature, we automatically behave in accordance with the precepts. And when we are not, that there's a great likelihood that in some way we are not actually quite aligned with our true nature. So they help wake us up to those moments where the mind is dividing and telling us that we're better than somebody else and somebody else deserves something and whatnot. Helps wake us up to the sense of self being better than other selves and losing touch with its compassionate intimacy. But sometimes we find we actually can't stop breaking these precepts. We're aware that we're doing it, and we just keep doing it. Again, those are times where maybe we need help. When we find that our love is cut off, that we're not acting in accordance with our values, our deepest values, we're not acting out of love, these are wake-up calls for us. And of course, it happens to us all because we all have these wounds. One aspect of this chant is the way that it begins. We all have these wounds. That's okay. That's what it is to be human. To live within a world where we hurt each other. First noble truth, we suffer. So noticing that and noticing the way the precepts help awaken us to that suffering, to the way that we perpetuate it in the world. Calling us back to our true nature. And I'm going to circle right back to emptiness and form here. Our true nature, which is, in some very deep sense, about interconnection, about mutual dependence, about relatedness, Our lack of an intrinsic nature is because we are relation. We aren't nothing. Emptiness doesn't mean nothingness. It means relation, relatedness. Without any fixed identity of our own, always in relationship. So it's waking up to those relationships and embracing them, embracing our relatedness. Feeling the intimacy of that, this profound intimacy that we realize as we sit and practice together is the coming together of emptiness and form. The falling away of emptiness and form. This presence, this intimacy, the way we are woven of each other. That's our birthright. That's compassion. That's love. This interdependence, this inherent caring. The possibility of waking up to the way that our healing is situated in love. Thank you.